Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 19th episode of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast. Hello, Kayla. How are you?
I am great. I am sitting in this beautiful, well, I mean, it's not really that pretty, but I'm sitting in my new studio room, air quote studio.
That's so exciting. So we heard your complaints. Just kidding. We heard your helpful feedback about our audio, and we're trying really hard to make adjustments on that. And Kayla has redone an entire room in her house to be the podcast studio.
Yeah.
And someday maybe I will too. I don't know.
It's covered in foam squares, and it was a really interesting project because they got delivered, because I don't have a lot of money, so I didn't get the like super great foam squares, but they come all compressed, so then you got to like open them and let them pop back to shape. And so they're similar shapes, but they're definitely all not the same shape.
Yeah, but it's so much better than the other room, which was just big and echoey.
Yep.
So this, and it looks awesome. Like what I can see via Zoom, it looks fantastic.
Yep, I got the purple and black to go for the checker theme. It was pretty great.
I love it.
My grandpa made this ladder and little table behind me, and they're a perfect color stain to just add enough. Plus now Sean can record music in this room.
That's awesome. Someday I'm going to own my own house and I'm going to create my own podcast studio, but right now I rent, and so I can't do anything too particularly like permanent.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
You'd have a hard time with this room because I tried to 3M tape all of the foam squares to the wall. Quickly realized that wouldn't happen. So I just went and got my staple gun. These are all stapled to my wall.
Whoa, wait, didn't you just spend like $150 on 3M tape?
No.
Okay.
I went to Menards. I went to Menards to get 3M tape and left with $150 in merchandise.
Okay.
The 3M tape that I got was like $10 worth, and I will use it for other things.
Okay.
But no, I was merely telling you in that message that I have no self-control at Menards.
Okay. As long as you didn't spend $150 on 3M tape that you couldn't use for this very specific project. You're now just like rolling in 3M tape, diving into it like Scrooge McDuck in his money pile, but with 3M strips.
Every Midwesterner out there knows the theme, you know, save big money at Menards. But I do not save big money at Menards. I spend big money at Menards.
But imagine how much it would be at any other location.
Yep. So that was my big project. I've got to finish cleaning the rest of the house now because this room was just storage. So all of the stuff that was stored in here is now thrown out into the other rooms of the house.
Yep.
So when we're done recording today, I'll probably organize a bit of that. But otherwise, that was my big project all week/weekend. How was your week?
It was pretty good. I have discovered that, okay, I have always been the weird one at the party. Like, I've accepted this about myself. This is something I've always been. I'm used to this being me, but I used to also be able to, like, really tamper it down depending on who I'm with. Like, some people get to see my weird, and other people, I can probably come off as relatively normal. I forgot how to do that during COVID. So we went to Steve's family's cabin for one night from Saturday night to Sunday, and we were just kind of like sitting around, and his aunt was there standing next to me, and I was like trying to think of something to say and be talkative and like, you know, a delightful guest and human. And I decided to do that by saying, gosh, isn't it so nice to be able to hang out with people without the threat of imminent death? To which she looked at me in absolute horror and was like, what? I was like, you know, because we're all vaccinated and so we're safe to hang out together and we don't have to worry about getting COVID. And she was like, just staring at me.
Oh, honey.
And then went, oh, I was a little concerned as to who it is that you're normally hanging out with if that's your response to social situations. And I was like, well, that... Okay.
It's me.
Cool.
When you're hanging out with somebody and thinking about imminent death, it just means you're hanging out with me too much.
No, I mean, that's how we've always been. And the people that I've been hanging out with, my normal friends, not normal people, but my normal friends would look at me and go, right? Isn't it though? And they did. That was not her response. Her response was to look at me with shock and awe and what the fuck? And I was like, oh, good. Hey guys, I'm hanging out with you now. And now I don't think I'm ever going to be invited back for anything ever again.
Oh, don't exaggerate. You know you will be.
I know. They like me. But I think, I can't even remember what the other things were. I said a couple of other things and I'm like, oh, you know, I have this podcast where my friend and I talk about really weird things all the time. And this is just my sense of humor with the people that I've been interacting with the most. And yeah, that's...
Steve is a member of their family. They get it. They understand.
I still don't think Steve would say something like that. I think that's just me.
I think it depends on what mood you catch Steve in.
I know. I know. But another weird thing happened, actually, while we were there. So the cabin, there isn't indoor plumbing. I mean, In the cabin itself, there's like running water, but there isn't a bathroom. There's an outhouse. And there it's the outhouse is in this like separate little structure. It looks like a bathroom. It looks, you know what it looks like? It looks like one of those toilets that you see that are like eco-friendly.
Yep, yep.
So the outhouse is in a structure and it's got two parts in it. So there's the outhouse part and then it shares a wall with the storage area, which is where they put all like the pool floaties and, or I guess lake floaties and all that jazz. And I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I really had to go to the bathroom. And we were staying out in this bunkhouse away from everyone else. So it's just the two of us and then his roommate's dogs. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and it was kind of cold out and I had to get up out off the top bunk, which is hard because I'm short. I had to jump off the top bunk and then I had to go out into the darkness to go to the outhouse, which is not something that I like to do because as a person who's grown up on horror movies, I can only assume that there's a murderer out there hiding in the woods in the darkness. I think that is a totally valid fear and I have it. So I went into the outhouse, I was going to the bathroom, and then I hear on the wall that shared with that like secondary storage area, three distinctive knocks. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's no one awake. I saw not a person. Also, they would have to be inside the storage thingy. And that was locked. But there were three distinctive knocks. And I was like, oh, good. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm alone in an outhouse in the woods. And there's knocking in a place where there wouldn't be a person. And so then I like casually like opened up the door and I looked around. And then I walked very quickly back to the bunkhouse. And then I like had my back to the door as I opened it, like looking around to make sure no one could sneak up on me. And then I shut the door and I'm like, okay. All right. Well, I'm inside now. There are dogs in here. So hopefully they'll bark if, you know, something happens. But they didn't bark as if anyone was around because they were still sleeping when I came inside. So maybe they're just useless. I don't know. But yeah, that was my adventures at the cabin.
And then the next day, she found a bloody hook embedded in the side of the outhouse.
Yeah.
That was your most dramatic gasp yet. I was pretty proud of you for that one.
Thank you. I'm a Leo. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, see that shit? I do camping, but I don't do camping. I don't want to camp. I will go camping because Sean wants to go camping. But like the boys have this trip planned in September to go to the Boundary Waters.
Nope.
Fuck it.
Never want to.
No.
People get murdered all the time, not just in horror movies. I'm also a true crime buff. I know about all the people who go missing in state parks. There are so many. No one knows what happened to them. No thanks.
But, like, Sean and I are planning a trip for my birthday week out west with my friends Chan and Connor, and they've got this giant van that it's kind of going to be like a vamper situation. I'm okay with that.
Totally. And I've said, because Steve normally does this like weekend long music celebration in the woods for his birthday. And I'm like, I'm going to have to rent a mini camper. That's just what's going to have to happen. I don't do tents. I don't like the idea of being murdered in a tent. I would rather have a camper that I can lock. It's just how I feel about it. I just want a little camper. You and me can share the little camper, and Sean and Steve can share a tent.
Yes. Well, with that in mind, I think that we have ranted quite a bit, and I think that I should start the stories.
Yeah, let's start the stories. I'm actually really excited about mine. So in turn, I'm also really excited about yours, because then I get to tell mine.
As a turn, we did discuss it, so there's no worries about overlapping themes today. So we're both going in strong and solid in our confidence. Yes. That's the word I was looking for. And all of a sudden, all that confidence was just ruined by the fact that I could not remember the word confidence. So
it's okay. I was confident that you'd get it eventually. So
we're both readers.
Mm-hmm.
We both have our library cards.
I do.
And so I'm going to talk about a library today. So the Willard Library can be found in Evansville, Indiana, which I don't know if you're aware of where that is.
Mm-mm.
Bigger town. The population was 117,400 at the last census. And it's the third most populous city in Indiana after Indianapolis and Fort Wayne. So it's a bigger city.
Okay.
And this is actually the oldest library in the city.
Nice.
Founder Willard Carpenter wanted to leave a lasting legacy in Evansville, a town he had helped to build through politics and business. His dream was actually to create a college, but turns out the resources were not significant enough to fund a fully sustainable institution of higher learning. So faced with that reality, and with so many who had told him that the college would struggle at best, Carpenter was encouraged by his peers to direct his intentions to founding another educational institution, a public library.
I like how his initial intention was to create an entire college, like a learning institution, and then was told that that would be too expensive. And so he's just like, well, here's a library then. Yeah.
Yep. Something that costs money all the way to something that is free to the public.
Yeah.
I think it's the better way to go, honestly.
I think so. I think it'll last longer for one thing.
Carpenter seemed to like this idea because he could see a connection between the two. Both were dedicated to learning and would benefit the community. And so with his long-held dream of creating a Willard College on hold, he directed it to the creation of the Willard Library. Inspired by the Emma Willard School of Troy in New York, he'd always wanted to found an educational institution with the name Willard in it. You'd think, okay, Carpenter Library, because that's his last name, but he really liked the idea of having the name Willard in it, and that's how they came up with the Willard Library.
Wait, so that's not his name?
No, his name is Willard.
Oh, okay.
But it's not his last name. His last name is Carpenter, and everybody expected him to call it the Carpenter Library, but he really liked this school in Troy, New York, so he's like, well, we're just going to put Willard in there instead of Carpenter, because he apparently really likes his name.
That's super funny and a very weird way to go about it, but all right.
With construction in full swing in 1883, now 80 years old, Willard was on the job site every day, inspecting the work of the paid laborers and working, which not everybody was thrilled about. His family was said to be embarrassed that he was hauling around wheelbarrows and climbing up on the roof. And one has to wonder how excited the workers were to have his watchful eyes on them every day, while trying to make sure that he's actually doing the stuff that needs to be done to actually complete the work on time.
Yep, I've definitely been in situations like that where it's like, why don't you go sit down? Take a rest. And you're like, no, I want to be working right here with you. And you're like, you are messing everything up, man.
His work came to an end, however, in late October 1883 when Carpenter suffered a paralyzing stroke.
Oh, no.
On November 3rd, he died before he could see the building completed. His death actually jeopardized funding for it. How do I word this? He was great and generous to the community, but very frugal with his family.
Ah, so he died, and then suddenly they're like, well, we want that money because we had to deal with him our whole lives.
Yep.
And then they're like, but it's set aside for this project.
So this very driven businessman apparently had little constructive involvement with his three children, Louise, Marcia, and Albert. Later in life, he determined that they would receive very little inheritance from him. In fact, he allegedly told his daughter Louise and her husband that they would receive nothing. Rather than leave his fortune to his surviving children, Willard left his estate to this grand project, the library, and they hated him for it. Furious, Louise sued to have access to the inheritance. She lost, and the library continued to grow, Once fully stocked with books, they had their grand opening on March 28, 1885. Hauntings and libraries seem like they could go hand in hand. Many libraries like this one are big old buildings filled with even older books.
Right.
So it makes sense that otherworldly forces would feel some draw towards these places. And the Willard Library has been dealing with one such apparition for 80 years. She is known as the Gray Lady. In the early hours of the morning in 1937, a janitor was making his rounds at the library. The library was calm at night, so he typically worked alone, and it had never been a problem for him before. He didn't see why he needed to work with anyone now. But around 3 a.m., as usual, he strolled down the basement stairs, down a small corridor, and began to head towards the furnace to check it, when a veiled woman wearing gray appeared before him. Startled, he dropped his light, and when he went to retrieve it, the woman had disappeared. The janitor fled, and shortly thereafter, he quit his position at the library because no one could promise him that the phantom wouldn't appear again.
Whoa! So not just a ghost story, but a ghost story that literally made someone quit their job.
Yep. He was so spooked by this that he was like, unless you can promise me this won't happen again, I'm out. Peace. And the people were like, well, no, I can't promise you that this won't happen again, because I don't know how you expect me to adhere to that promise.
Right. We don't even know who this woman is. Like, I don't know how to even communicate with her to tell her, please don't show up again.
This is the origin story of the Gray Lady. This is the first reported sighting of her. Soon, other staff and patrons began to see the ghostly Gray Lady. Sometimes she wandered halls with books. Other times she perched on stairways. And in the most terrifying cases, she appeared in the elevator where the living had no escape and could only wait till they reached their floor.
Oh no.
Her presence was often preceded by a heavy perfume. And she occasionally played tricks on library visitors by turning faucets on and off, making lights flicker, and most egregiously by misshelving books, which librarians love when you do that.
Clearly not the ghost of a former librarian.
In 2017, Courier and Press interviewed library director Greg Hagar about the activity at the library, and he told them of a custodian walking through Willard Library early one morning who was surprised to hear what he thought sounded like someone slamming keys on an old-fashioned typewriter, that distinct click, click, click noise. Mm-hmm. Expecting to see a librarian who came into work early, he walked around bookshelves to investigate the noise, but found he was alone, and also there was no typewriter of any kind around. When he got back to the corner, Hagar said, he realized not only was there nobody there was no typewriter. And Hagar said, despite working in a building famous for being haunted, Hagar is a skeptic.
Oh.
So the man actually telling this ghost story is skeptical. When they asked him if he believed in ghosts, he responded with a firm no. I am willing to keep an open mind, but I just, he said, trailing off. I've seen weird things here. I've heard what I would describe as footsteps coming across the floor at a time where the library was otherwise closed. But old buildings make funny noises. They do strange things. So I'm a skeptic.
I mean, fair.
So this man has firsthand accounts from staff, and he still doesn't believe. Others at the library are convinced that the Gray Lady exists. Intern Lisa Redman, 33, said she hasn't seen the ghost, but has seen lights flicker. And once she left a room and came back to find five formerly standing books all laying face down. Redmond said, I've loved ghost stories since I was a kid, so getting to be in a haunted location is exciting, and she was stoked to just have this incident happen to her. She didn't feel scared. She was excited.
Way braver than that janitor.
And the director, apparently.
Right.
I guess being a skeptic can be brave, but I just think you should own it. You got this haunted library.
I feel like sometimes people who are skeptical of things are not actually skeptical. They're just too afraid to even contemplate what it could be, and that thing is scary. So they're like, well, obviously that scary thing doesn't exist, therefore I'm not afraid. There's no reason for me to pray because it's not real. But really, yep, they're actually just afraid.
It is said that the Gray Lady really seems to enjoy the children's area of the library. In fact, the library had a longtime children's librarian, Miss Margaret Mayer, who is said to have many ghostly experiences, such as small mischief around the area, like knocking books off the shelves, pulling chairs out from under tables, and cold spots that may have just been the Gray Lady passing by. As I mentioned previously about her perfume, it said that she could smell her perfume from time to time as you walk by and catch a smell of lilac or lavender, and it mm-hmm. goes away just as quickly as it came on.
Interesting.
The elevator is another haunted location. There haven't been any Gray Lady sightings on the first floor, but there have been a couple of very interesting unexplained experiences related directly to the elevator. A former custodian got on the elevator on the first floor early one morning, pushed the button to go down, but nothing happened. He tried a couple of more times, but nothing worked. Frustrated, he said out loud, "I want to go down." And it worked. It just started working. Also, before shelves blocked the view of the elevator from the Berry Plastics building across the street, mm-hmm. employees at the Berry Plastics building working the night shift there would report seeing Willard's elevator going up and down all night.
Can you imagine being in that other building, being like, yeah, I mean, I heard that it's haunted. And then you're like, I mean, yeah, the elevator, watch. I can just imagine a group of people surrounding, like, a window, just watching it go up and down. Like, did you see it? Is there anyone there? Do you see anyone?
Somebody no, break in and just ride the elevator?
That's so weird.
Other documented sightings include that the Gray Lady was reportedly seen on August 10th of 2010 in the basement hallway by the assistant children's librarian.
That's my birthday. Sorry, go ahead.
Psychics visiting the library in 2007 said they were able to verify that a ghost has been there and that paranormal investigative groups have brought equipment designed to locate it and gotten confirmation that something is present. One guest reported feeling something touch their hair and earrings. Ugh. During a visit to the library, lecturers from the University of Southern Indiana said they saw a ghost peering into water.
Peering into water?
I couldn't find more on this, so I don't know if it was, like, water in the sink, toilet water, but they saw a ghost peering into water.
Okay.
Policemen responded to a security alarm at the library one night and said they saw two ghosts in an upstairs window of the library during the response. A library patron and local weathercaster also reported an encounter with a spirit in the elevator. The last known sighting of the Gray Lady was in 2015 when two library staff members in the children's department noticed a security camera showing a strange woman looking out of a glass door. She turned to look at the camera, and then her image began to pixelate on the video, and her face was the last to disappear.
What? That's so weird, though, that 2015?
Yep.
So she was really active until then. Was that literally her disappearing and, like, going into the afterlife?
Well, it's the last documented sighting, but before I get into that, who could the Gray Lady be? There's a strong belief that it is Louise Carpenter, still enraged at her lack of inheritance, and that she now just haunts the library because this is where all her money went.
Okay. You gotta be less bitter to end up a ghost at your dad's library just because you didn't get the money.
There's also a story of a local woman that drowned that they think might be the Gray Lady. Or is she simply someone who loved books enough that she couldn't leave them, even in death? Well, as we said, spirits are drawn to these places, so it could also be the ghost of a woman who was particularly attached to a book that got donated to the library, as a lot of the library's books are based off of donations.
That's my favorite theory out of all of them.
We may never know the Gray Lady's true identity, but the people at Willard Library encourage patrons to keep an eye out for her nonetheless. They have ghost cams set up so that people on the internet can see when she passes through spaces. You can look for the ghost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are 6 cameras in the first floor adult services room, the basement hallway, the research room, the children's story room, and the stairway. I was digging through some videos looking for evidence, and just a couple of tastes of the comments here. Benjamin Galster 2 years ago said that he put an alarm system in the Willard Library in the early 80s, and there's definitely a presence there. And a user 5 years ago posted, and his username is Gilmon470. He said, "I've gotten some pretty gnarly footage in the basement hall. It was so gnarly that people tried to claim I faked it on the Facebook page. Frowny face emoticon."
Aww, sad.
And then one commenter below him said, "Maybe they didn't believe you because you use words like gnarly."
What What are you, a surfer from the 90s?
You can check out the cameras for yourself at www.willardghost.com. Okay. But I actually pulled up the cameras so I could show you what they kind of look like. And then I saved a couple of captures to share with you.
Yeah, let's see it.
It's a very basic website. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who built it, but here are a couple of photos people have captured of what they believe to be the Gray Lady. This is in the children's reading area.
Oh, wow.
Passing by the beanbags. This is in the adult services room.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And this last one, I think, might be fake, but it was still too creepy to not show you.
Yeah, that's the only one that seems like an actual, like, full, could be a real person because of the solidness of them. The other ones are, like, translucent.
And that's what makes me think that this last image might be fake, is because all of the reported sightings in cameras are misty.
Right.
Like a blue or gray mist. This looks much more solid.
Yeah, that looks like a person.
I will share all three of these images on our social media along with a link to the cameras so that you can check it out for yourself if you'd like. And that is the story of the Willard Library in Evansville, Indiana.
That was awesome. I feel like I had originally looked that up weeks ago, but actually didn't get that far into it. But I liked it. I didn't realize that there was actually like photographic evidence, or I would have done that one. I'm kidding.
On a skeptic scale, what do you give it?
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Oh, we're very different. I was thinking the whole time I was doing this, I'm like, I'm giving this a 5. There's so much photo evidence.
Yeah, I don't know why a 3.5.
It's not scary to me.
No. Well, and paranormal doesn't have to be scary. Okay, you know what? You get a 4.
I'll take my 4 and I'll roll with it. I'm only giving it a 5 because there is so much evidence. And unlike a lot of the stories that we have where it seems like they talked about it in the 80s and 90s, like 2000s and 2010s are when a lot of these stories are coming from. So I feel like that's pretty solid.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, super credit to the library for embracing this and just giving us these webcams to watch all the time.
Oh, 100%.
Never thought I'd spend so much time just looking into a library.
That has no one in it.
Yeah, no one's there right now.
So, I have a story for you tonight, and mine is also kind of academic related, but not. There's experiments. Okay.
We're being smart girls today.
We're smart girls today. So we, case in point, your story. We talk about ghosts a lot on this podcast, which is pretty par for the course when it comes to any sort of media that's paranormal based. And although we approach our topics with a good amount of skepticism, along with the fact that we legitimately like these stories, we believe in the paranormal, or we at least want to believe in the paranormal, we have always heard the hardcore naysayers, such as that director of the library, that where no matter how much evidence you provide them, they always basically say the same thing. They're like, ghosts aren't real. The paranormal isn't real. It's all in your imagination. Everyone's just making it up, right?
The anti-Zach Bagans.
Yeah, the anti-Zach Bagans. Well, it just so happens that in 1882, a group of individuals from the UK came together to study paranormal phenomenon to determine if it is, in fact, real. And they call themselves the Society for Psychical Research, or SPR. And their purpose is to understand events and abilities commonly described as psychic or paranormal. Per Wikipedia, it describes itself as, quote, the first society to conduct organized scholarly research into human experiences that challenge contemporary scientific models, end quote. And since its founding in 1882, different versions of SPR have popped up all over the world. You can find them in Australia, Iceland, Spain, and the US, just to name a few. And some of them are in fact still active today, while others were basically pretty much abandoned throughout the 1900s. Mm-hmm. So the American Society for Psychical Research, ASPR, for example, is still active. And they actually are the oldest psychical research organization in the United States dedicated to parapsychology. And it actually still maintains offices and a library in New York City, which both the members and the general public can check out.
Very cool.
I didn't know that they were open to the public, so that's cool. But today, I'm actually not going to talk about the American Society for Psychical Research. We are going to head a little bit further north to Canada, more specifically to Toronto, Ontario, because I'm going to tell you about the Philip experiment.
Ooh, this has been on your reserve list for months.
Months.
I'm excited to finally hear about it. I haven't even Googled it. I was intrigued by the name, but I haven't even Googled it because I wanted to get all the details from you.
Good, good. Yeah, I know that we generally try and stay within the Midwest, but if I'm going to go outside of it, I need to give you something Midwest first. So last week I did the Wabasha Caves in Minnesota, and now I'm like, oh, now we're going to head to Canada. Here we go. All right, so the Philip experiment was an experiment conducted by the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, TSPR, in 1972, to see if they could prove whether or not the paranormal phenomenon experienced during a haunting could all be the production of the human mind. And could a ghost exist not as a lingering spirit or a soul of a person who has passed, but rather be created by a person or group's sheer will for them to exist?
Like self-fulfilling prophecy, but ghosts.
Yes. Also, a little bit more like you think about something strong enough that it manifests itself, kind of like a tulpa.
Okay. Okay.
So Dr. George Owen, a mathematician, a geneticist, and the director of the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, gathered 8 of their members, none of whom had shown previous psychic abilities, who would become known as Owen's Group. And the group was made up of Dr. Owen's wife, Iris, the former chairperson for Mensa in Canada, Margaret Sparrow, an industrial designer named Andy H., his wife Lauren, an accountant by the name of Bernice M., Dorothy O'Donnell, who was a bookkeeper, a heating engineer named Al Peacock, and a sociology student named Sidney K., as well as a psychologist named Dr. Joel Witten, who often attended the group session as an observer. The group's first task was to, well, create a ghost. Together, they created an entire biography for this fictional man that they would hopefully be able to call into existence. And they named him Philip Elsford, and he was an aristocratic Englishman who lived in the 1600s. Born in 1624 in England, Philip had an early military career and was knighted by the age of 16. And he was also involved in the English Civil War and became personal friends with Charles II, working for him as a spy. He was Catholic, and he was married to a beautiful but cold and frigid wife named Dorothea, the daughter of a neighboring nobleman. One day, while writing on the boundaries of his estate, Philip came across, they say gypsy, I believe the correct term in 2021 is Romani, so that he came across a Romani encampment where he saw a beautiful, dark-eyed, raven-haired Romani girl named Margot and fell instantly in love with her. So he brought her back to secretly live in his gatehouse near the stables of Diddington Manor, his family home.
Diddington?
Diddington. Apparently, Diddington was an actual place. However, the people who had once resided at Diddington were nothing like Philip, or how they described Philip to be. So for a good amount of time, he was able to keep his secret love nest a secret. But eventually, Dorothea, his wife, got a little sus about the whole situation, and when she found out about Margot, she accused her of witchcraft and stealing her husband. And Philip was too scared of losing his reputation as well as his possessions to protest the allegations against Margot during the trial, and she was eventually convicted of witchcraft and burned at the stake.
So let me be clear. This piece of trash, was like, yeah, come live with me. It'll be fine. It'll be great. I'm just going to keep you locked away. And then his wife catches him, accuses her of witchcraft, mm-hmm. not her shitty husband.
Mm-hmm.
And the Romani girl gets put on trial for witchcraft and not the shitty husband?
Yes, but also none of this happened. This is a fictitious biography that they created for this man named Philip.
I'm still angry about it.
Yeah, well... He feels really bad about it. So after this, Philip actually feels so horrible that he had not tried to defend Margot, as he should. And he would essentially just pace the battlements of Diddington all day in despair. Finally, one morning in 1654, Philip was found dead, having committed suicide at age 30 over the loss, grief, and regret of allowing Margot to be burned at the stake. So that's his backstory. And they even had someone from the group draw a picture of this fictitious Philip in order to help them essentially collectively imagine him. And So they had the backstory and they knew what he looked like. Now all they needed to do was somehow manifest Philip himself. In September of 1972, the group began to meet and conjure Philip. They gathered, they discussed him, his life, they pictured his face, they imagined his experiences, and they tried to bring about a kind of like group hallucination to bring forth Philip into our world. Not surprisingly, nothing happened. Some of the members of group said that there were times when they thought that maybe that they felt a presence, but nothing happened that could actually be considered as concrete proof that anything had occurred. So after a year, they decided that they were actually going to change their tactics. And their first attempts to conjure Phillips were basically done in a regularly lit room where they basically were just sitting around having conversations and sort of collectively meditating on this shared idea to try and manifest Philip. But perhaps if they got more in the mood, it would help. So taking a page out of the early 1900s spiritualist books, they actually decided to conduct meetings going forward, seance style, where they would dim the lights, sit around a table, sing songs, and surround themselves with the pictures of the type of castles that they imagined Philip would have lived in, as well as objects from that actual time period. And wouldn't you know it? It worked.
Did it work, though? Or did they summon a demon?
You're getting ahead in the story, Kayla.
Oh, I did? Am I? Okay, sweet. Okay, cool. I'm excited.
So it wasn't long after they switched to the classic seance style that they actually received their first communication with Philip in the way of very distinctive raps on the table. And soon, Philip began answering questions asked by the group. And they did the very classic one rap for yes, two rap for no's. And they knew it was Philip because they asked him. And he was like, one rap, yep, it's me, bitches. And through this method of communication with a yes and no answers, they were actually able to find out a lot about his life. Some of it obviously was the stuff that they had created. They wrote it down. They knew exactly what happened with Margot and all that jazz because they were the ones who wrote it. But he also began to go into more details about his life and even start to show a kind of personality based upon his answers, whether or not it was kind of showing his likes or dislikes, but also in his enthusiasm or hesitation as to how he responded to things. Like, mm-hmm. They could tell, like, oh, he's not interested in talking about this, or he's really hesitant. But curiously enough, although he had expanded outside of the detailed biography that they had written for him, none of the additional information that he presented was more than what the group members already knew. So essentially, when they were putting together the historically factual timeline of his life, they did a lot of research into what happened in that area during that time period. And all of the information that didn't actually go into his story, but they were aware of, was all correct because they had done the research. And so when Philip was expanding about his life, nothing that was said was out of the realm of what they already knew. So okay. If this was something that they manifested on their own, he would also have that information because they had that information. And then his spirit started moving the table, sliding it from side to side, despite the fact that the floor was apparently covered in really thick carpet.
Nope,
it's the 1970s.
Nope, nope.
I assume it's shag carpet. I agree. Nope, nope, nope. And at times it was reported that the table would even dance on like 2 to 3 legs.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But because it was meant to be a scientific experiment, they obviously had to attempt to create a controlled environment in order to avoid hoaxes. So they did this thing called like a doily night, which essentially is that all of the participants would sit around a table and they'd have their hands on it, classic seance style. But they would put doilies underneath their hands. So if a person was attempting to slide the table with their hands on it, it wouldn't work because the doilies would slide instead.
Got it. Okay.
And even with the doilies under their hands, they couldn't, like, the table would continue to move around. So it obviously wasn't the participants who were doing it. And then they also analyzed the audio of the knocks and found that the sound envelope or whatever was very distinctive and not something that the participants could recreate. So the sound envelope, from what I gather, is kind of like, you know, when you hit a bell and you have the initial, like, clink, and then you have the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have sensitive enough equipment, you could hear that same kind of initial sound and then the vibration after like a rap or a knock.
Yeah.
And what they would do is they would isolate what happened when Philip knocked, and then they'd isolate what happened when the participants knocked. And I think his were just shorter. Like, his didn't vibrate after, and then the participants actually couldn't recreate, no one could recreate the knocks that were essentially otherworldly.
They ran an experiment to determine the exact sound, is what you're saying, mm-hmm. and nobody could do it.
Yeah. It was impossible. Okay. The knocks vibrated more than, or less when Philip did it than they should have. And some of the participants did say that they could actually hear whispering in responses to their questions, but that wasn't something that they were ever able to capture on audio recordings. And then the group would ask Philip to do things like dim the lights, and he would, or turn them back on, and he was like, yeah, I got you. So according to liveabout.com, quote, the table around which the group sat was almost always the focal point of peculiar phenomenon. After a cool breeze blew across the table, they asked Philip if he could cause it to start and stop at will. And he could, and he did. And the group then noticed that the table itself felt different to the touch whenever Philip was present, having a subtle electric or an alive quality. On a few occasions, a fine mist formed in the center of the table. But most astonishingly, the group reported that the table would sometimes be so animated that it would rush over to meet latecomers to the session or even trap members into the corner of the room. So all of this was essentially happening in a private room in the Toronto Society for Psychical Research. And then they decided to kind of like take it on the road. And the group decided to contact Philip in front of a live audience as well as a documentary film crew. And sure enough, when they requested that Philip join them, he did. He rapped on the table, he flickered the lights, he even moved and levitated the table. And you can actually find the footage from the documentary online.
Wait, there's video of this?
There's video of this. And I watched it. So it's like 11 minutes long, this like little documentary. And you hear the psychologist that I mentioned at the beginning, Dr. Joel Witten. So he is actually interviewed in this little documentary, and you can see footage of them, of all the participants, not only in the sort of staged setup with the audience, but also just in their like day-to-day meetings with Philip. And you can see the table moving up and down. At one point, they're all sitting around it with their hands on it, and it starts to like rotate, and then they all kind of get up. And so they're standing above the table, and it continues to levitate and, like, move. It's bizarre. However, despite all of the activity that surrounds the Philip seances, they were never able to actually complete the full and real objective of the experiment, which was to physically manifest Philip as a spirit or an entity. Like I said, there was a couple of times where there was, like, a mist that hung over the table, but not a fully fledged, like, manifestation. But overall, the TSPR labeled the Philip experiment a success. Though, of course, those naysayers criticized the experiment for lacking solid controls and providing ambiguous results due to the unreliability of seances. At a certain point, like, you're just going to say seances in general are unreliable, but that's how the experiment is conducted, so.
But I was going to say, like, I feel like the people that say this kind of stuff, we're going to say it anyway.
Exactly. They don't care what results you got. They're just going to say it's not real. But the Toronto Society for Psychical Research was super into it. And just a few weeks later, they actually got a new group of people who established contact with a new ghost named Lilith, who was a French-Canadian spy. Other similar experiences conjured up such entities as Sebastian, the medieval alchemist, and even Axel, who was a man from the future. Although all of them were completely fictional, they all produce unexplainable communication through their unique raps. And the most successful attempt at conjuring a fictional ghost after Philip was an experiment that was done by an Australian group, and it was called the Skippy Experiment, where six participants created the story of Skippy Cartman, a 14-year-old Australian girl who would communicate through raps and scratches. So in the end, what happened because of the Philip experiment is that some people think that it's proof that the spirit world doesn't actually exist and that even physical phenomenon are all created by the human mind, which is a theory for a lot of places that we come across. This is actually why I wanted to do it, is because we've talked about stories where there are like child ghosts And everyone mm-hmm. who goes in there as a researcher comes across this like child spirit, but there's no reason for them to be there. And there's a theory that a story of a child being a ghost in that area exists. And then enough people thought about it that when they go there to research it, they manifest it themselves,
mm-hmm.
which would help explain certain situations where things shouldn't be haunted, but they seem to be. Or as liveabout.com put it, quote, another point of view is that even though Philip was completely fictional, the Owen group really did contact the spirit world. And a playful, or perhaps demonic, some would argue, spirit took the opportunity of these seances to act as Philip and produce the extraordinary psychokinetic phenomenon recorded.
That's what I was saying!
Either way, the documented results show that physical manifestations can and do happen, whether or not they are produced by someone manifesting it themselves, or something could be there posing as something else.
I am just, if you fucks around, you're going to get a demon, because they're going to use that opportunity that you're trying to communicate with somebody that doesn't exist to give you a demon.
Right.
That's where my brain would be at, personally. Right. But I see what you're saying. I see both sides. I understand the scientific theories behind it, but in my head, I'm just like, demon.
Right, which is why when there are, like, child ghosts in places where they shouldn't be, the number one theory, not just from Zach Bagans, is that it must be a demon, because why else would there be this child ghost when there's not supposed to be one, and maybe people called upon it, and they're like, oh, perfect opportunity. Demons.
There you go.
It also is apparently the real life inspiration for a movie called The Quiet Ones, which I've never watched. I've heard of, though. I was going to ask you whether or not you've seen it.
I have seen that.
Yeah.
And it is good.
So the Phillips experiment is apparently the real life inspiration for The Quiet Ones, which I now have to watch.
That makes a lot of sense now, thinking back on that movie. I mean, it's good. It's not earth shattering. I don't go around telling everybody to watch The Quiet Ones, but I think it deserves better than it got credit for.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to see it. I'll probably try and watch it this week and let you all know my review.
So, yeah. So the Philip experiment is fascinating to me. And now I'm glad I didn't Google it before you told me this story.
Oh, yeah. You would have Googled it and got the exact gist of it in the definition of what the Phillips experiment is. So I just got a really funny text from my sister, and it says, a couple of days ago, Samson, which is her dog, woke me up in the middle of the night and had to go to the bathroom really bad. So I came downstairs, and all of a sudden he wouldn't go into the dining room because he seemed really scared of something in it. And I'm like, either there's a person in there or it's ghosts. And then she goes, luckily, ? Ghosts? ? Like, at a certain point, you're like, okay, it could be a real person or it could be ghosts. Same with me in the outhouse at the cabin. Like, real person, ghost, I guess ghost, so that's good. I don't know.
On a skeptic scale, I'm going to give the Philip experiment a 4.5.
I am actually gonna give it a 5, just because I saw the footage, kind of like you, although I did see yours. So
maybe I would change it after I watch this documentary, which we are going to link in social media.
And it's 11 minutes long.
Because,
so.
Yeah, I might change after that. And the only reason that I would give this a 4.5 when I gave the other one a 5 is because some part of me thinks that because this was an experiment, maybe they wanted to prove something.
Dr. Owen actually went into it with the intention of proving that, like, poltergeists aren't real.
Okay.
Which, I guess he kind of proved that they could possibly not be. But he didn't have the definitive say that they are not. Like, they couldn't prove one way or the other. Proving that someone could be manifested out of, like, a collective consciousness doesn't prove that ghosts don't exist. It just proves that it is a possibility that that could be some of it. That is often a theory with poltergeists, is that they are sort of like manifested out of, like, usually teenage hormones, teenage girls a lot of the times. But that doesn't make other hauntings not exist. Even people who are hardcore, like, believers in like ghosts and spirits in general, will also say poltergeist could be caused by the hormones created from a teenage girl. So
I'm sticking with a 4.5 with a full recognition that it might change to a 5 once I watch this documentary.
Oh yeah, that's fine. I'm not offended.
And
4.5 is
we're
amazing.
We both picked highly believable stories this week. Guess what I did earlier today before we recorded? I pulled a tarot card for the podcast.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Tell me all about it.
I was all nervous that if I waited and did it while we were recording, I would get all up in my head and start questioning things and not be in the right space for it. So instead, I woke up, I meditated, and then I pulled a card for the listeners of the podcast. If you're not familiar, the way that online tarot reads go is it's difficult to read for a specific person because there's no way for you, the listeners, to put your energy into the cards as I pull a card for you. If you think about it, it all goes back to the idea of intent. There are all the cards of tarot designed to encompass the full human experience. Any card you pick at any moment can mean something different to you. What you have to choose to go with here is that the card I'm picking at this moment could spark something you identify with. So it doesn't matter if I chose the card or you chose the card. You're hearing this, so you are meant to hear it. So whatever this sparks in you after I read this to you is what you are meant to hear.
Lovely. I'm excited. Hopefully it's not a death card.
The card that I pulled for the podcast today was the Six of Wands. If you look at the Six of Wands, it depicts somebody who is currently wearing like a wreath around their neck, riding a horse through a crowd of people who are cheering. The horse is white, which is a well-known symbol of strength and purity and success. Okay. And the crowd is there to show public's recognition for the achievements of the man riding the horse. The wand that the man is carrying also has a wreath which is tied to it in attempt to further emphasize the success. This was upright, not reversed, and this card is about public recognition, victory, and success. Not only have you managed to properly succeed in achieving your goals, whether it be one or many, but you are also being acknowledged for them and the results that you've managed to attain. You might have received a reward, acclaim, or even just like a good attaboy from your boss. This card is showing you that you are harnessing the strengths and talents that you have within you in an attempt to bring a successful outcome into your life. So basically, this card means you're doing fucking great and keep at it because you are a badass bitch.
Attaboy.
That is the Six of Wands.
I mean, you're starting hot with these.
For you, the listeners.
Starting hot with these tarot card readings. So far, we're doing great.
Dude, I was like super, just like really nervous I was going to pull a bad card for the listeners. And I did take a photo of it so that I can post it on social media and show people that this is legit the card I pulled. I'm like all worried people are going to question me. I'm like, no, I pulled this card.
Just accept that you're
amazing. And I
was
thinking of all of you when I did
it. Just accept that you're amazing. You did something that was awesome. Even if you're not doing well in other parts of your life, it's okay because you've done something and you should celebrate it and be excited because we're excited for you.
And then I was like, what a perfect like first card to pull for the listeners because we appreciate y'all so much and I want y'all to know that you're badass bitches.
Love it.
Love it. I do also have a short listener story
here. Awesome.
Yes. From, again, the Gina Gleason.
Love her. Love her.
My story is a quickie response to episode 9. In that episode, Brittany talks about the Griggs Mansion, which has been bought and sold many times in a relatively short amount of time, much more frequently than any normal market turnover. That story immediately brought to mind my own experience purchasing my first home. 5 years ago, after battling horrendous roach infestations, a drugged-up neighbor who set my deck on fire in the middle of the night, and careless renovators who both flooded my apartment and spray-painted my dog teal, I decided I was done with apartment living.
Yeah.
I called up a realtor and set an appointment to start looking at homes a week later. The next day, I resumed my Zillow browsing and saw a new listing pop up that was perfect. Not only was it in Austin city limits and in my price range, it was adorable. Recently renovated, lush, beautiful backyard, and a spare building out back that I could use for an art studio. Oh. Knowing the current real estate market in Austin, this house was going to go fast. So I called up my realtor and asked if there was any way we could change our appointment to now. She was out with another client, so we set up a meeting for the next day. I was giddy with excitement, thinking I might have a shot at this dream house. The next day, I pull up to the listed address, and the realtor was already waiting for me in the driveway. I can't quite explain the feeling, but something similar to dread washed over me. I didn't want to step foot into that house. I sat in the car for a moment while my rational mind kicked back in. I knew I was going to sound like a total weirdo if I refused to go into the house that I had just made my realtor rearrange her schedule for.
Yeah.
So I went in. It was cute. It looked just like the pictures, but it didn't feel like the pictures. Something was off, and I wanted to get out of there as fast as I could. My realtor was perplexed at my disinterest, but finally agreed we could go look at another property instead. I hopped into my car, ready to get the hell out of there, but for some reason, my car wouldn't start. Now, in some instances, that wouldn't be all that unusual, but this was fall in Texas, not winter in Minnesota. Right. And my car was a reliable Honda Accord that had never had an issue before or ever again in the years following that incident. I ended up putting an offer on the next house I visited because its neutral energy was so appealing in comparison. That night, out of curiosity, I looked at the Zillow listing one last time, only to find the sales history buried down at the bottom of the page. The house had been purchased and sold 7 times over the course of 10 years.
Whoa.
Interpret that as you may, but even in a strong market, there's nothing normal about
that. No. Especially if it was adorable with a, like an unusual backyard that actually had plants in it. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I can imagine being in a house that gives you that sense of dread. If the next house feels just normal, you're like, yeah, sweet.
This one.
No,
I this, want one. This one.
Let's do this one.
Mm-hmm. No dread here. Love that. Love not having dread.
So that was our listener story. We had 2 awesome stories. I'm feeling very solid about this podcast this week. I think we should end this on as positive a note as my tarot reading.
I love it. I love it. Are you going to mention to our listeners what you're doing next weekend and why we're recording on a Monday next week?
Oh, yeah, that is a positive note to end things on. Next week, I will be visiting Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, which Brittany spoke about in episode...
something. One of the early ones.
Episode something.
One of the early ones.
One of the very early ones. And I'm excited to visit there with my mom and my aunt and my sister. And so hopefully I'll have some cool stories coming up next week when we record.
I'm excited. I'm excited to hear it. I'm going to Brewfest. So that's cool. But
we're both
going
to have a good time.
Not nearly as cool as going to a haunted cemetery.
But yours has beer.
That's very true. That's very true. You are correct.
If you have any listener stories you would like to submit to us, you can do so at www.leftofskeptic.com and click the listeners tab, or you can email us directly at leftofskeptic@gmail.com. You can remain anonymous if you'd like to, or include your name. Either way, we just ask that you please include your pronouns.
Yes, please and thank you. You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter as well as Instagram at Left of Skeptic and Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
Well, thank you all for joining us this spooky Wednesday, you beautiful badass bitches out there. And I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week.
Happy spooky Wednesday.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.